तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamani, A Crest Jewel of Discrimination by Shankara, the great seer philosopher. The disciple asked this question, Master, please listen to the questions I am about to ask. I shall feel blessed if I may hear an answer from your lips. What in reality is this bondage? How did it begin? In what is it rooted? How is a man set free from it? What is the non-Atman? What is the Supreme Atman? How can one discriminate between them? Please answer me. Now in that connection, he points out one fundamental truth which I have often emphasized, and that is that it's a matter of experience, matter of realization. You have to realize the Atman, you have to realize Atman as one with Brahman. And so he's emphasizing that here. The sick man who takes medicine and follows the rules of diet is seen to be restored to health, but not through the effects of another. Now, he did not answer the questions directly, but he will do that gradually. But in the first place, he points out that the real answer to any question, to any problem can be had only when you have experienced the truth for yourself. It is, the solution is not in intellectual understanding. The solution is something direct and immediate experience of the truth of God. You see, this darkness, this ignorance that veils our covering, this can be removed by light. Another direct and immediate experience. For instance, there is the rope lying there. But instead of the rope, you are seeing a snake because of the darkness. Now, how can that fear be removed? Only bring in the light and see the rope as rope. Similarly, you are the Atman, one with Brahman. There is nothing in the universe but He, that Brahman, that reality, one reality. But we see this manifold universe. We consider ourselves to be mortal human beings. This we experience also directly and immediately through the veil of ignorance. And this can be removed only when a direct and immediate knowledge of Brahman comes to us. When you see the Atman as Atman, when you see this whole universe as Atman and Brahman. And then, of course, we have to see it ourselves. And that is what he's emphasizing in these verses here. The sick man who takes medicine and follows the rules of diet is seen to be restored to health, but not through the efforts of another. If somebody else takes the medicine for you, you can't be healed. A clear vision of the reality may be obtained only through our own eyes when they have been opened by spiritual insight, never through the eyes of some other seer. You know, just mark this verse. Only through our own eyes, when they have been opened by spiritual insight. It's a divine sight that we have to get. You see, in the Gita, for instance, you study, you read how Sri Krishna tells Arjuna about this reality, and then he says, you can see that reality, you can experience that, but not with these eyes. Then, you see, he was an avatar, a divine incarnation. So, he could give that insight by a touch, as in the life of Sri Ramakrishna we find. So he says, I will give you that divine sight. And then he saw the universal form of God. So a clear vision of the reality may be obtained only through our own eyes, when they have been opened by spiritual insight, never through the eyes of some other seer. Through our own eyes we learn what the moon looks like. How could we learn this? Through the eyes of others. Beautiful illustration. For instance, a blind man. Can you describe to him how the moon looks like? It's not possible. Similarly, what this experience is, what the reality, what Brahman is, no words can express. You have to reach that state. Those cords that bind us because of our ignorance, our lustful desires, and the fruits of our karma, how could anybody but ourselves unite them even in the course of innumerable ages? Mark this verse. There's the bondage, cords that bind us. Now, what really is the bondage? Bondage, if we analyze, is the bondage of the law of karma. Whatever we are, our sufferings and our enjoyments, and these are within the relative plane. We have not touched that which is beyond. Within this relative plane, we have sufferings and enjoyments. There is no such thing as unalloyed happiness or the life is just full of misery. Both are there. And because of our karmas. Now, how can these karmas be wiped out? By other karmas? No. You see, for innumerable ages and for innumerable births also, if you do karmas, they will create more and more bondage. What is it that can wipe out all karmas? Knowledge. You see, here is the point. Karmas attach themselves to the ego. I, that sense of ego, I am the doer of actions. And so I enjoy or I suffer from my actions. Now eliminate this sense of ego. Karmas drop away. Not that you don't do any karma anymore, but then whatever you do, you are not the doer of actions. You are only an instrument. And the Atman is the witness. And so the karma does not attach itself to the Atman. Karma only attaches to the sense of ego. The moment we free ourselves from the sense of ego, all karmas drop away. Neither by the practice of yoga or of Sankhya philosophy, nor by good works, nor by learning, does liberation come, but only through a realization that Atman and Brahman are one in no other way. You see, of course, practice of yoga or spiritual disciplines, or doing good works, or studying scriptures, all these do not directly give you any knowledge, give you any freedom, but they are the means and methods by which that divine sight opens up and you realize the Atman and Brahman. Now from another angle again, Shankara also will point that out. My master often said, God is not a commodity like potatoes and eggplants that you can buy with a certain price. So, if we think that by practice of certain spiritual disciplines, say so many japams and so many hours of meditation would give us that, then we are fooling ourselves. Now then again, it is only through the grace, divine grace, that it may come to us. There is no other way. Then why do we have to do the practices of spiritual disciplines? Shankara gives this reason. You see, this question was put to Shankara. And he was asked, now this Atman and Brahman, this realization is an infinite realization, in realization of the infinite. The effect is something that is eternal. How can any finite spiritual disciplines, whatever you may struggle, your struggle is only finite. How can that give you this infinite effect? He said, no, it doesn't give you that infinite effect. That effect is already in you. Your Atman is united with Brahman all the time. But there's the cover of ignorance. This ignorance is something that is finite. And so, through finite struggles, you remove this finite ignorance. And remove this ignorance, and the sun is shining all the time. You see, sun is self-luminous. Clouds may gather. You take another gust of wind to remove the clouds, and the self-luminous sun is shining. Same. But Maharaj said a little differently. He said, this divine grace can come to anybody, any moment, and one may have that wonderful experience, ecstatic vision of God, anybody can have any time. It doesn't matter whether one is a sinner or saint. But here is the point. If it comes and then you are not ready for it, you cannot hold it, but of course not the samadhi. That's again, if once it comes, then nothing can bother, would bother you. Even if you are again entangled in the world, that vision will come back to you. You do not lose it. But Maharaj said, in order that we can hold that vision, hold that experience, we must keep ourselves open by practicing these spiritual disciplines. It is the duty of a king to please his people, but not everybody who pleases the people is fit to be a king. You see how the logic can be misunderstood or misapplied. Because it is the duty of a king to please his people, but not everybody who pleases the people is fit to be a king. For the people can be pleased by the beauty of a Veena's form and the skill with which its strings are plucked. Then he points out, erudition, well-articulated speech, a wealth of words, and skill in expounding the scriptures, these things give pleasure to the learned, but they do not bring liberation. So you see, erudition, scriptures, nothing can give you that knowledge of Brahma without the grace, I say. Or in other words, if there is no longing in the heart for God, and one is a great learned scholar, versed in the scriptures, he can expound the scriptures and give pleasure to the people, but then he may give pleasure to the people, but everybody that gives pleasure to the people is not the king, is not the man of God. Then he points out, study of the scriptures is fruitless. As long as Brahman has not been experienced, and when Brahman has been experienced, it is useless to read the scriptures. What are we to do about it now? In other words, do not think that by the study of the scriptures or by repeating the words of the scriptures, you can realize God. You know, it's very interesting. You know, Zen Buddhism teaches that, like Vedanta also, that reality, that truth, cannot be expressed in so many words. Now, if you and I, you see, somebody asks a question, what is Zen or what is Vedanta? And you remain silent. Well, you think you are answering the question. But have you reached that? Have you reached that silence? You see how we can fool ourselves. So study of scriptures has no use if Brahman has not been experienced. And then as you experience Brahman, study of scriptures also is useless. But study of scriptures is needed in the beginning to get an understanding, to give us the urge to realize God. Sri Ramakrishna, in his very simple way, expressed this truth. He said, a man was in the city and his wife wrote to him to bring certain things shopping from the city. And she gave a list of those things. And then somehow this man lost that letter. And so he searched everywhere and he was very eager to get hold of that letter. And he found it. And then with the help of that list, he made all the shopping. And then what was the use of that list anymore? He just threw away. Similarly, that list of shopping, similarly scriptures, guide of the Guru, all this is important. But afterwards, no use. You don't need to, You see, there is this story again, or parable that Sri Ramakrishna used to say. There's a great knower of Brahman, a teacher, and a disciple came to him, and this teacher said to the disciple, look here, give me my fee before I teach you. But holy sir, you have not given me any lessons, you have not taught me at all, and you want your fee? How is that? He said, look, after you have got lessons from me, there will be neither guru nor disciple. So before you come to that stage, you better give me my fees. It was very practical also. A network of words is like a dense forest which causes the mind to wander hither and thither. Therefore, those who know this truth should struggle hard to experience Brahman. That must be our only concern. You know, this is what I often say, that problems, how to solve problems, instead of wasting our time in that, struggle how I can find God, then all your problems are solved. So that must be the only concern. When a man has been bitten by a snake of ignorance, he can only be cured by the realization of Brahman. What use are Vedas or scriptures, charms or herbs? A sickness is not cured by saying the word medicine. You must take the medicine. Liberation does not come by merely saying the word Brahman. Brahman must be actually experienced. Until you allow this apparent universe to dissolve from your consciousness, until you have experienced Brahman, how can you find liberation just by saying the word Brahman? The result is merely a noise. That is, this whole universe is to disappear from our vision, and Brahman has to become revealed. Then only life's purpose is achieved. You know, this thought came to me that life, our living, this human life, becomes fruitless if we do not see God. Vain is this life. And this we must feel. And struggle and pray to realize Brahman. Nothing short of that. Until a man has destroyed his enemies and taken possession of the splendor and wealth of the kingdom, he cannot become a king by simply saying, "I am a king." Now that's also another point that we should consider. By simply saying, "I am Brahman," does not help. You see, oftentimes, for instance, if you go to consider, "I am Brahman," who is this I? Is that your ego? You see, your ego has to be completely eliminated. And it is then that when you have taken possession of the kingdom, that kingdom of heaven, when you realize that splendor, then only you can say, "I am the king." It is then only that you can say, "I am Brahman." You know, in this connection again, I must point out, one of the disciples of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Turiyananda, he said at one time that whenever Swami Vivekananda used the word "I," he meant it, that universal self, always. Then he said, when we say "I," it is our ego. So that Atman, Brahman, and to live in that consciousness, that's not so easy. A buried treasure is not uncovered by merely uttering the words, "Come forth." You must follow the right directions, dig, remove the stones and earth from above it, and then make it your own. In the same way, the pure truth of the Atman which is buried under Maya and the effects of Maya, can be reached by meditation, contemplation, and other spiritual disciplines, such as a Noor or a Brahman may prescribe, but never by subtle arguments. You see, it's practical. You have to follow the methods and disciplines. Meditate. Keep recollectedness of God. Fix your heart in Him. Pray that you may have love and devotion. And such practices remove the ignorance, and Brahman becomes revealed. If you simply go on arguing about it, it doesn't help. Do something about it. Therefore, the wise must personally exert all their powers to get liberation from the bondage of the world, just as they would personally take remedies against physical ailments. Now he comes to the question. The question you have asked today is a very good one. It is relevant to the teachings of the scriptures. Its meaning is hidden deep as within an aphorism. It should be asked by all who seek liberation. Listen attentively, O prudent one, to what I say. By listening, you shall certainly be liberated from the bonds of the world. Of the steps to liberation, the first is declared to be complete detachment from all things which are non-eternal. Then comes the practice of tranquility, self-control and forbearance, and then the entire giving up of all actions which are done from personal selfish desire. Then the disciple must hear the truth of the Atman, reflect on it, and meditate upon it constantly without pause for a long time. Thus the wise man reaches the highest state in which consciousness of subject and object is dissolved away, and the infinite unitary consciousness alone remains, and he knows the bliss of Nirvana while still living on earth. I'll take this up again next. Here is one question. I understand that Vedanta is opposed to the methods of present-day depth psychology as represented by the Freudian school. Is Vedanta also opposed to the psychology of Carl Jung? If so, will you please explain why, since Jung has been accused of attempting to make the quest for psychological wholeness a religious journey for the individual. Now, Vedanta is not opposed to anything like this, psychology or anything. But when psychology begins to claim a religion to be spiritual and claims to find God, then I'd say, halt. Has Freud realized God? Has Jung realized God? Have they attained that transcendental consciousness? So what do they know? So that is the point. Ponder over it. What can they teach to a spiritual aspirant? They may help the crazy people. I don't know how far they can help. I have no idea. You see, I'm not crazy. At least I feel that way. And so I don't have to go to Freud or Jung. And if anybody wants to realize God, and if he goes to Freud and Jung, and if they say that they can show him the way, I think they are both mistaken. And in fact, they do not claim such. But these so-called devotees of psychology begin to claim everything in their name. They think that's spirituality, that's religion. It's a new religion that has come to the West. So go and have psychoanalyzed, be psychoanalyzed and find God. Is that possible? Has anybody found it? So I'm opposed to that, to the psychology business from that standpoint. You see, take for instance, do they have any idea of Atman? Do they talk about that unchangeable eternal reality or Brahman or God dwelling within each soul? Have they any idea of that? And yet, they talk about psychology. So, from our standpoint, their psychology is like Hamlet. Play of Hamlet, and the Hamlet is missing. You know, this reminds me of one Hollywood picture director. Heard this story about Hamlet, then he said, I have that picture made, but I don't like that fellow Hamlet. Get rid of that. To one psychoanalyst I asked one time, you see, he was a student of Vedanta, and so I asked him, now look, what is your Atman according to your psychology? He says, conscience. I said, go and look at the dictionary, the meaning of the word conscience, how it changes every time, how it differs in different people. You see, they don't know. And still in the stage of a very, very low stage of development. And don't you see how they differ? How they are changing every day? So which psychologist would you believe? You know, one time when we were writing that book, How to Know God, the publishers asked us to compare some of these yoga psychology with the Western psychology. And we wrote to them, now which one should we compare with? And this psychology that we have is something that is eternal and an experienced, is experienced. And then just consider psychology. Studying the mind of another objectively. How can you study the mind of another objectively? The whole thing is fallacious in my mind. Now, I think I've said enough. Now ask something.
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. Swami, I hope this isn't an argument, but most of us have to live and work in the world, and the idea that it all is vain becomes a problem.
Let it be created.
Well, you still have to go on and live and work.
Sure, you will find you'll be taken care of. Such is the law. Yes. No, we all live in the world. A holy man also lives in the world. You know, one time somebody asked a question to my master, is it possible to realize God while living in the world? I said, why not? I'm also living in the world.
You have to create a spiritual mood, don't you, Swami?
Yes, that's right. You have to create that. You have to use the right word. You have to create that. It doesn't come. We have to create it. We have to struggle for it.
After the knowledge of Brahman is obtained, the world no longer seems vain, does it?
No, just the opposite. In a different way. Then the world gives some meaning to it. You see, Sri Ramakrishna used to give this illustration. You take zeros and add together, the result is zero. But put a figure, one, and then add zeros, it adds in value. So if you see this world as the world, the appearance, it is nothing but zero. And all your struggles are to add zeros to the zeros, ends in nothing. But if you put one behind it, if you make God the basis of your life, then you see, the whole meaning changes. You see, all spiritual aspirants at one time or another realize this fact. How can people live without God? Yes.
If someone realizes that life is but a short journey and that they all disappear one by one, does that person still have to go into samadhi? Is it required?
Yes, samadhi, whatever may be the condition, samadhi is the one thing that gives us liberation, nothing else. But this samadhi can come to many spiritualist aspirants at the moment of death. And thus he attains liberation.
In other words, each one of us needs to go into samadhi?
Yes, we have to. Samadhi means we have to realize God. There's no other way to realize God. And that realization may come at the moment of death, one who has been struggling and has not been able to see him in life, then that comes at the moment of death.
Would it be accurate to say that we are in a state of samadhi already, but we don't realize it as such?
Well, not exactly so. Only thing you can say, we are in Brahman. We are all the time united in Brahman. Only we do not know. And samadhi gives this knowledge.
Swamiji spoke of a kind of boredom or irritation with worldly people and their talk.
He was getting bored with the people, is that what you're... Yes.
That they got on his nerves by talking such idle and worldly matters.
I don't know what he said. If he said that, you know, Swamiji's heart was big. Sri Ramakrishna, he chose his disciples always. And Swamiji, when he was a young boy, he would bring all kinds of people to Ramakrishna and say, do something for these people. His heart was big. And so Sri Ramakrishna said, what can I do? You see, milk, a little milk, but so many pounds of water. And how long can I heat it up to get rid of the water and get the milk? Why do you bring such people? They have to wait. But Swamiji himself, you see, he would take everybody, and then, of course, he would get bored. He would say, no, it's doing no good to these people. You see, perhaps like that. But again, I must say that whomsoever Swamiji touched, that person became liberated. He may not know it, but at the moment of death he will know it. You see, these Swamiji and these disciples of Sri Ramakrishna and Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother, they were different. Whoever saw them, whoever touched them, whoever got their blessings, they are liberated. One more question, if you want to ask.
What happens if the realization of God is not made in this lifetime?
You are born again and you will be given another opportunity to realize. Everybody will realize. Everybody will attain that illumined knowledge of God and be free, because that's our very nature. And that will come out in some life or other. So, if one doesn't realize in this life, he will in the next, or in the next, or in the next. But that would be lazy man's religion.
But that is the point of the struggle.
Huh?
To achieve that in this lifetime?
That's what we have been teaching. Yeah, well, come some more times, then you will see. I'm not that kind of a guru that can just give you a touch and give you knowledge of God. No. If you come to me, I'll say you have to work hard, struggle hard. I can show you the way you have to walk. Om Hari Om. Om Sahana Bhavato Sahana Vunakto Sahavirjam Karavavahai Tejasena Vaditamastu Mavidvishabahai. Om. May Brahman protect us, may he guide us, may he give us strength and right understanding. May we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.